This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Thursday, October 21st, 2010. I'm Caleb Brown. We should be careful when we want to improve upon Madison's Constitution. That from William F. Connolly, author of the new book, James Madison Rules America. We spoke following a forum for the book held last week.
Our biggest problem may be in part our tendency to misunderstand the Constitution. I argue in the book, James Madison Rules America, that Madison literally governs America, the Constitution governs. And I honestly think that oftentimes we as citizens and politicians fail to understand or appreciate the notion that the Constitution continues to govern us. This is in part an effort, in part because of efforts on the part of Woodrow Wilson and other progressive thinkers, Herbert Crowley, to rip our political system from its roots in the Constitution. And Wilson certainly, Woodrow Wilson certainly, and the progressives sought to eclipse the Constitution. So I purposely use in the book the dramatic title, James Madison Rules America, to underscore the point that our politics today still is seriously grounded in the Constitution. And whether we appreciate or understand that or not, has actually practical consequences. And we should appreciate it or understand the way in which it has very real, very palpable, practical consequences. Obviously, James Madison is dead. He doesn't rule in that sense. But the Constitution governs in the most immediate sense, as we were discussing in the panel earlier today, that neither the Democrats nor the Republicans, neither the president or the Congress governs. Both parties at all time are only part of the system. Lloyd Cutler, a neo-Wilsonian, Jimmy Carter's White House counsel, wrote an essay in Foreign Affairs magazine back in 1979 titled To Form a Government, in which he gave us the sort of traditional Wilsonian lament that unlike the British system, where one party, the majority party, is clearly the government and the minority party is clearly the loyal opposition, Cutler said, and this argument is taken from Woodrow Wilson, that in our political system, we never form a government. Neither party is ever simply the government or simply the opposition. Now, that's a criticism on the part of neo-Wilsonians or Woodrow Wilson himself of our political system, but I saw it as a virtue or as a strength. Neither party ever is simply the government. Right now, the Democrats control the White House, the House, and the Senate, although it's questionable whether they control the Senate or whether the Senate controls them. They have a majority in the Senate and in the House, and they certainly control the White House. But are the Democrats the government? No. We never refer, for example, to the party in the White House as the government. We refer to them as the administration. Are the Republicans simply the opposition? No, especially not in the Senate. The Senate, you know, while the House is clearly a majoritarian institution and Nancy Pelosi and the majority party are pretty clearly in control in the House, it isn't the case in the Senate. The Senate arguably is a minoritarian institution. It clearly empowers the minority party and even individual senators. And so the majority party is not clearly in control. The minority party clearly has leverage. And Republicans, as the minority party today, have leverage and are part of the government, just as Democrats, as the majority party in the House and Senate and controlling the White House, are part of the government. So we have this, we're constantly confronted with this constitutional conundrum, and Madison intended this. And this plays out in practical ways within the two political parties in the two chambers. Each party is constantly faced with the question, are we part of the government or are we part of the opposition? Should we play the politics of compromise or the politics of confrontation? Should we be bipartisan or should we be partisan? And the two parties in the two chambers are rife with factionalism fighting over that conundrum. And it's a conundrum in the sense that there is no correct answer to that question. I think Madison intended that. Neither party by itself is the government. It's a constant conundrum and an answerable question, and it keeps the two parties in check. But it doesn't just check and balance. It also empowers. Our constitutional system is designed both to humble and empower presidents and Congress, Democrats and Republicans, depending as needed.
Empowerment, though, seems most often to come in the form of stopping somebody else who wants to gain some sort of edge, that is, the various overlapping authorities that exist within the Constitution among the three branches of government, everybody sort of checking each other. It seems like that seems to be the most empowering part of what Madison wrote.
The separation, yes. Yes, except that the separation of powers is more than merely the checks and balances. It's very clear, as you say, that the separation of powers empowers the minority party to thwart the effort of overweening majorities to tyrannize as necessary. So in that sense, the checks and balances work. But the system also is designed to empower people to accomplish certain things. You know, Ronald Reagan was able to come into office and put together a bit of a economic or tax revolution. Likewise, George W. Bush, when he came into office. So it does, in fact, empower, again, presidents and Congress, the majority and the minority party, depending on the circumstances. The separation of powers is not simply designed to limit the abuse of power. It's also designed to provide for the effective use of power. And I'll give you a quick example of that. Someone asked earlier about Abraham Lincoln. We have in our constitutional system a very strong executive and a very strong Congress. And at times, they push back and forth one another. When we need a strong executive and the ability to act, say 9/11, or maybe the Civil War, for example, with the example of Lincoln, we have the capacity to do that. We have a strong executive when we need it. But we also have a strong Congress willing and able to push back against an overweening executive and to humble that executive as needed. Putting the shoe on the other foot, Congress as an institution is while the executive is good at acting, Congress as an institution is good at talking. We have both the capacity to act and the capacity to talk built into our system. We can move effectively with executive action when necessary. We can move slowly and deliberately and talk. When necessary. When we need strong, effective executive authority, we have it, the Civil War being a prime example. But no sooner did the Civil War end than Congress spent decades pushing back against an overweening executive. Well, likewise, the imperial presidency of the 1960s and the 1970s, we've been pushing back against that ever since. And, 9/11 occurs, and we suddenly need a strong, effective executive out front. And Congress actually defers to that executive and grants enormous power to the executive with the Patriot Act, et cetera. But then we immediately begin to question that maybe we're infringing on, civil liberties with something like this, the Patriot Act. And Congress begins to push back against, including a Republican Congress against a Republican president, begins to push back against the potential of an overweening executive. Or again, to use the example of Congress, Congress too can be overweening. You can have an imperial Congress, just as you can conceivably have an imperial executive. Congress can be beastly. And Madison and Hamilton and the Federalists created the president in part to tame the beast.
There is a narrative. In shorthand, it comes in the form of Congress is broken. Let's make Congress work again. And typically that refers to someone's agenda, the president often not being able to get his program through Congress. And does that affect one party or the other or more?
I do not think that Congress is the broken branch. I do not think the constitutional system is broken. Part of that argument is often the argument that our system is gridlocked, but you'd be hard-pressed to look back over what Congress and the president, Democratic Congress and Democratic president, accomplished in terms of sweeping historic legislation over the last year and say that the system is gridlocked. Whether you agree or disagree with the legislation, the fact is this current Congress has been remarkably productive. So I don't think you can say that the system is gridlocked. The suggestion is almost absurd on its face. I think that the system is, in fact, designed to limit the abuse of power and, again, as I said, to provide for the effective use of power. it's pretty clear the Democrats most recently have overreached, and now you're seeing the reaction set in, and the Democrats will not be able to overreach following the November election. You're likely to have a Republican majority in the House, possibly in the Senate, but you'll at least have a much humbled Democratic majority in the Senate. You don't really govern the Senate if you have 53, 52 seats. So the Democrats will not be able to continue the long march toward empowering the government as they have over the last year or two.
During the Bush years, and especially leading up to the war in Iraq, it appeared that Congress had punted on the war power. Would you say that that's true?
I think that the Constitution provides for both a strong Hamiltonian executive, but as I said, as well as a strong Congress. I think at various times in our history, executives have in fact overreached. And we can debate, you know, when those times are. But you may remember our most successful presidents are typically those who use the executive power to its fullest. Abraham Lincoln was called a constitutional dictator. You know, maybe we needed an especially strong executive during the biggest crisis in our particular history. The charge of an imperial presidency was leveled at Johnson, it was leveled at Nixon, leveled at Reagan, leveled now at George W. Bush, including by people like Barack Obama, although Barack Obama now is acting in many ways like George W. Bush in attempting to accumulate power in the executive vis-a-vis the legislature. I think that with 9/11 with, for example, the Patriot Act, you did see Congress being fairly deferential, perhaps too deferential to the executive. But you almost immediately began to see set in a sort of response to that and a willingness to begin to push back. I think we constantly in our separation of power system have the potential for an imperial president and an imperial Congress. And I think that tension is a healthy tension, and it constantly informs our politics, which is frequently about separation of powers battles. And if it's not about separation of powers battles, it's about national power versus state power, federalism questions.
On federalism, it was once viewed that the indirect selection of senators was the necessary and sufficient condition for securing federalism. And since that is to say, those parts of the Constitution that pit the federal against state governments were going to be more hotly debated than they are today, so Commerce Clause being a key example of that, what do you think?
Well, I'm a Madisonian, so I'm opposed to amending Madison's Constitution. I'm not in favor of either the 17th Amendment, direct election of senators. I do think it tipped the balance in favor of the national government. I'm also opposed to the 22nd Amendment, the two-term amendment for presidents. I think that it has had contradictory effects on the power of the executive and the power of the legislature. So I think that we always need to be very careful second-guessing Madison and his Constitution, because one of the reasons it's worth paying attention to the founding debate between the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists over ratification of the Constitution was they were dealing with first principles. They really thought things through to the ground floor, if you will, in a way in which we typically don't today. And so I tend to recommend that we think twice and three times before we second guess Madison.
William F. Connolly is author of the book James Madison Rules America. We spoke following a forum for the book last week. You can watch or listen to the forum at cato.org.